on this episode of Baseball Barbecast. Gerrit Cole makes his long-awaited return to the Yankees rotation. We review the journey that he took to get to this exciting start on Friday against the Tampa Bay Rays. We talk about the Cleveland Guardians, who just mopped the Tigers in Detroit. The Brewers swept the Cubs in Chicago. J.P. Crawford is willing to play third base. And, of course, it's Friday. So we give you the good, the bad, the ugly, and, oh, boy, is it a good one. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbecast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world that hopes Gerrit Cole covers first. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and that's probably a mean joke. I feel bad already.
Too soon, as they say. Gerrit Cole, I do believe that is the last time that I wrote about Gerrit Cole was game five of the 2024 World Series, because I wrote the losing end of that equation. Boy, was that a long time ago in so many ways. But that was the last time we saw Gerrit Cole throw a meaningful pitch, for better or for worse. And on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbecast, we're going to talk about how he's about to throw another one. Let's do it. It's our opener.
After missing the entire 2025 season with Thomas Johnson's surgery, Gerrit Cole will make his long-awaited return on Friday evening at home against the Tampa Bay Rays. Spring training 2025. I have a very vivid. Let me start that again. 3, 2, 1. Spring training 2025, I have a very vivid memory of the first day of pitchers and catchers for the New York Yankees. The pitchers, the Yankee pitchers, were doing PFPs, pitcher fielding practice. They lined up on the mound and they readied themselves to go through the motions. And the very first person in line, as is often the case for anything Yankee pitcher related, was Gerrit Cole. It was a fascinating moment because the last time we had seen Gerrit Cole on a mound, he forgot to cover first base in Game 5 of the 2024 World Series. And so there was this kind of unspoken energy. What would Gerrit Cole do the very first rep of spring training during his PFP? It was not notable at all. He went over, he fielded it, tossed it to first, he got back in line, and everyone kind of exhaled. There was no joke. There was no bit. He just did it. But in that moment, it felt like the beginning of a redemption tour that wasn't necessarily necessary. Gerrit Cole, despite forgetting to cover first base in that inning, was dominant for most of that game and put together a heroic 2024 season after coming back from an injury. And so in my mind, as I was kind of building the narrative of Gerrit Cole's 2025 season, it was like, how does he make up for one mistake that overshadowed all of his accomplishments? And then it was all moot in the blink of an eye, in the snap of an elbow. Because Gerrit Cole, in early March of 2025, felt a little discomfort in the elbow region. And after two opinions, one from Dr. Neil Re-Elatach, Cole underwent Tommy John surgery and missed all of 2025.
Yeah, and I think that we can rewind a little bit further. We don't have to go do his whole career, but I do think that his injury timeline is so interesting, because you alluded to it briefly there, but let's just go back to 2023. Gerrit Cole is incredible. Gerrit Cole finally, at long last, wins the Cy Young Award after coming oh so close in 2019 when he arguably deserved it. 2021, he finished second. He finished it fourth two other times, fifth in 2018. He was incredible. He finally wins in 2023. And the other thing about that, and just his whole career up to that point, is that Gerrit Cole had essentially never been injured. Maybe he had been on the IL once at some point here or there, but this was not just one of the best pitchers in baseball, but one of the most durable. So that was the note he ended 2023 on, right? He wins the Cy Young unanimously. Great. But in 2024, he has this elbow scare in spring training that takes him out. He doesn't make his season debut until June. And I remember in those early months, we were like, oh my God, is Gerrit Cole finally going to have to get serious elbow surgery? And he rested and rested and rested and was able to come back and pitch the rest of that season, make it to the World Series. So when it pops up again in 2025, even though we had just watched him pitch for multiple months, we were kind of like, well, you know, this was something that happened recently and now we can't be as surprised. The one other part of this timeline that we have to mention, though, before we get to 2025 spring training, is what happened after the World Series in 2024. Because at that point, Gerrit Cole had come back. He had pitched. He had thrown a no-hitter for the first four innings of that Game 5 and was generally looking pretty good until him. He, by the way, as we know, he was not the only one that made an error that inning. There was this very strange contractual situation where Gerrit Cole had the ability to opt out of the 4 years and $144 million remaining on his contract. However, if he did that, the Yankees had the option to add 1 year and $36 million to essentially make that opt-out void. There was this very strange sequence where it was reported that Gerrit Cole was indeed going to opt out, seemingly conveying that Gerrit Cole was like, well, I'm still one of the best pitchers in the world. I am healthy, and I can get more than 4-144, or I can at least get the Yankees to tack on this extra year. But something happened, and eventually it was then clarified, no, he never actually opted out, and he's just going to stay on this deal.
The Yankees effectively called the bluff. They called the bluff because Gerrit Cole never wanted to leave. He's happy. He owns a house up in Connecticut. He likes being a Yankee. And I'm sure that his representative, who, by the way, is a Scotty B, Scott Boras, was like, hey, let's opt out. See if we can get more. The Yankees said, we're not going to do that. You can test the market. And he said, actually, LOL, JK, control Z. And ended up back on the Yankees. And in that weird way, it was a zero-risk move for Cole. When you're looking at that exact decision, it does make him look a little bit of a doofus. But he ends up back in pinstripes anyway, and it has no real impact on his future, in my opinion.
Yes, but I did want to bring that up, though, because when that happened, it resurfaced some of the conversation about Gerrit Cole's health. And like how confident he is what the team would be. And like, okay, would he actually be willing to opt out and chase more money? And would another team be willing to give him that money knowing he just had this elbow scare not long ago and he's, you know, entering his mid-30s? But he ends up back, and you're right, in general, it doesn't really impact it. But then when we get to 25, he goes down. He does have to get Tommy John surgery in March of 2025. And that wipes him out and takes him off the map for the New York Yankees, which is just a really weird reality for a pitcher that has been one of the most relevant in our sport for a long time.
It takes him off the map, but not out of sight. Great article at Sports Illustrated this morning by Steph Apstein, friend of the program, who wrote about Cole's time away from the mound. I was having a conversation recently with Bo Bichette of the New York Mets after the Juan Soto wasn't communicating with his teammates thing. Mm-hmm. That happened earlier this year when he was injured and people were like, oh, this is weird. I was like, I was essentially asking Bo, like, how weird is this, right? And what he kind of explained to me is like, when guys are hurt, you're out of sight, out of mind for the most part. Like, it, for better or for worse, within the sport of baseball, players are taught, encouraged to kind of stay out of the way when they are on the IL. And that is because they are not often traveling with the team and therefore do not have like the full experience. Their energy does not match the team's energy. And Steph wrote about this in her piece. Cole would have days where he was feeling good and the team was not playing well. And that energy would sometimes clash. Now, Gerrit Cole, for a variety of reasons, is a different story. And so what is interesting to me is that over the last year, when the Yankees were home, he was around. He was a participant. And I like how the Yankees pitching staff, pitching development staff, coaches, utilized Cole to say, if a message comes from Gerrit Cole to Will Warren or Clark Schmidt or Cam Schlittler, it's going to carry as much, if not more, weight as if it comes from us. Let's make sure we are getting Gerrit to be on the same page with us, because we don't want him to tell Will Warren he should, you know, learn a splitter when like we don't want him to do that. And so there are parts of Steph's article where she talks about this, and I found that dynamic to be so fascinating just because Garrett wanted to be involved to an extent that a lot of other pitchers maybe wouldn't have wanted to be involved, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I'd just be curious from your perspective. I mean, Steph's story is fantastic. You were around the, like, was he, would you see him often? I mean, I know, like, I'm just curious how much you would see him maybe in pregame stuff, BP.
Yeah.
Because also part of Steph's story, which is great, is him also talking about how he got to spend, he clearly was not going on the road with the team almost ever, but he got to be home and be a parent and hang out with his two young sons in a way that he never expected he was going to be able to during his major league career. And that is something that he clearly learned to cherish and embrace. But it does sound like he was around the stadium a good amount. So I'm just curious if
he was around,
you know, noticed that.
Yeah, I saw him around. I talked to him multiple times. Like, he was available, and he would sometimes like show up late. He wasn't there every day. I mean, it's a long drive from Connecticut, whatever. But he was more around than any other Tommy John recoverer than I can remember, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So let's now set the stage for, I guess, our expectations, where he fits into the 2026 Yankees. Gerrit Cole has now been pitching for a while. He made some spring training outings. He made 6 rehab outings in the minor leagues, including in AAA on May 16th. He went 5 1/3, allowed 1 run, 386 pitches. Fastball was up to 99.6 miles an hour. He was throwing a bunch of sinkers in that AAA outing, which is an interesting... So, like, I'm curious to see how that manifests, if any part of his pitch mix is a little bit different. He's been so famously a four-seam guy since he went to Houston and New York. But early in his career with the Pirates, he was certainly throwing a lot of sinkers. I have a very vivid memory of Gerrit Cole's two-seamer when we saw him for the first time against the Giants in 2015. So, you know, this is a career that has evolved time and time again. The fact that the velocity is where it is certainly encouraging. He's kind of built up the workload. That said, it does sound like this is maybe a little bit sooner than we expected. It wasn't that long ago that Aaron Boone said he's still a ways off, but clearly the circumstances have changed, and he's proven, it sounds like in recent weeks, that he is ready to come contribute. And it also doesn't surprise me that he's like, yeah, you know what? I would like to come back and pitch against the Tampa Bay Rays, the team that is suddenly 4.5 games up in the American League East in this incredibly important series. You know, the Yankees have these other really good pitchers. It's not like they don't have any other good options, but it doesn't surprise me that Gerrit Cole wanted to kind of throw himself right back into the fire and that the organization would embrace that.
However, there is a spot open right now in the Yankees rotation with Max Fried going on the IL with an elbow bone bruise about a week ago. They have been rolling with Schlittler, Rodon, Weathers, Will Warren, Luis Gil, sent down to the minor leagues earlier this month. Clark Schmidt still working his way back. We've gotten some Elmer Rodriguez spot starts here and there. I think that part of the reason that Garrett is coming back now is because there is a space. Now, if Gerrit Cole woke up and said, I'm ready, I'm sure they would make a space for him. He's Gerrit Cole. But it does make that return simpler when there is somewhere for him to slot in. And it is part of the reason why the Yankees have one of the best staffs in the league. This is not just three good pitchers. Their depth is so enviable and has kind of weathered the inevitable storm of pitching injuries that comes for every team. And I think Gerrit Cole, in a silly way, is now like part of that depth, I guess.
Yes, for sure. And originally it was like, oh my God, what are you going to do with these 7 good pitchers? When if you were like counting heel there's and always counting attrition. When these guys all come back, but there's always attrition. I will say that as it is right now, and we don't really know the status of Max Fried, it doesn't seem that serious, that depth is is thinning out, and like they are going to need Carlos Rodon to start pitching better. I know last night was not a terrible outing by any stretch.
Better, he's definitely
moving in the right direction. And Schlittler has been a Cy Young contender, so you can't complain about him. Warren has taken that step forward. Weathers, I think, has outperformed expectations in a lot of regards. And I've expressed my concerns about the bullpen, which I think we've seen already in recent weeks, and they haven't necessarily changed anything there. They have still have some interesting arms at the AAA level. Brandon Beck, they've called up. LeGrande, who's throwing a billion miles an hour in AAA. I expect him to impact the bullpen at some point. Elmer Rodriguez, I think, can be useful. But at the same time, I agree with you. This flexes their depth. But I also think it puts maybe a little bit more pressure on Cole and Rodon to start pitching pretty well, pretty fast, in a way that we didn't necessarily expect when everybody was healthy and it looked like the Yankees might run away with the division. Because now you have this Rays team that won't stop winning and has already built this nice little lead. And now you have this weekend series where maybe the Yankees can close that gap, or it gets even bigger. And now you have an uphill battle to climb. And so those Cole and Rodon starts, while we should be patient because they're both, you know, coming back from these major injuries. And by the way, we probably are going to have to be patient with Max Fried too, whenever he comes back to a degree. I do think that the stakes are a little bit heightened here, but regardless of the team circumstances, I am just excited to watch Gerrit Cole pitch again, because, you know, when he's cooking, it's one of the best to ever do it. I mean, frankly, right? Like, this guy, especially what we were seeing in 23, and yeah, I mean, 2019 was really the just truly absurd levels of Gerrit Cole. But, dude, you know, that was also a time when you could be, as we know, using a little bit more sticky stuff than you can now. Yeah. But Gerrit Cole has proven, even after that, he's still one of the best pitchers in baseball. And that has been really fun to watch.
And he is a very interesting bridge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where between like the Kershaw, Scherzer, Verlander era and the Skeens, you know, Christopher Sanchez, Cam Schlittler era of pitching, like him and Wheeler kind of represent that. But there was a time where Gerrit Cole was one of the best pitchers in the world. Can he be that again? I'll take the under. But excited to see him back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because when you're coming back from this injury, we can't bank on anything. But the fact that he's throwing 99.6, it's not like he's easing into the Verlander Scherzer. All right, I've got to like grit it out and kitchen sink you to death here. Like, the guy clearly still has some pretty good stuff. If he starts going to multiple fastballs, which is clearly something that's working for Cam Schlittler, I think that would be really interesting. That said, to your point, he turns 36 in September. He's making $36 million this year and two more years after this. So this is a really important, sizable, you know, salary that the Yankees are still going to be counting on being one of their best pitchers, no matter how you slice it, as good as Cam Schlittler seems to be. I agree, though, the fact that he can now serve as sort of this elder statesman, for lack of a better term, on this pitching staff is pretty cool. But last thing we should just say is just setting up the series. I mean, it's just one of the most important regular season series we've seen so far this season. Gerrit Cole going up against another Cy Young contender in Nick Martinez and his 1.61 ERA. So we'll see that tonight. We've got Ryan Weathers and Drew Rasmussen on Saturday, and it looks like Will Warren and Shane McClanahan, who's starting to look a lot better lately, on Sunday. Oh, yeah. So the Rays certainly have their big guys going, which is certainly encouraging. The Yankees, you know, they're not going to have Schlittler for this series, what an opportunity for Gerrit Cole to return here and really set the tone for this series that is clearly very important. Because I mean, I got to be honest, looking up and seeing the Rays have a 4.5 game lead, which is one of the largest, it's the second largest division lead in baseball right now. Is the Rays over the Yankees behind only Atlanta. So, this is a pretty huge series. So we'll see how it goes.
Let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll dig into the Guardians, the Brewers, and J.P. Crawford. Who ain't leaving? Or is he? And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. That's a dirty looking floor there you got in Detroit. It would be a shame if something happened to it. Mop, mop, moppity mop. The Cleveland Guardians mopped into Detroit and mopped the Tigers, kicking their mop, mopping down the field, winning all four games at Comerica. As they put the P in Motown. There you go.
Put the P. Oh, okay. All right. Moptown, I think, is what we're trying to call it. Very yeah, well Moptown. Said. The
Mop I mean this girl. Is
this is kind of exactly what you would be afraid of if you were a Tigers fan going into this weekend with the vibes that this team has, like, oh god, Cleveland's gonna come here, a four game series, they're just gonna mop us. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, this just was just it was the least surprising in some respects. I mean, it should be surprising, because the reason why we talk about mops in the way that we do is because it's hard to do, especially on the road. Winning four games against the same team in consecutive days at the same city, it doesn't usually happen in Major League Baseball. But such is where these two clubs are at this point in the season, where the Guardians are doing a lot of things right and the Tigers are just finding ways to lose no matter what. Monday was not close, and that looked like a team that was way better than the other team. But the rest of these games were close. 4-3, 3-2, 3-1. The Tigers had chances to win in all three of those, and they just couldn't get it done, because this offense right now is just, I mean, shockingly horrible. I think they scored, here's a ridiculous stat, they just had a 7-game homestand against the Blue Jays and Guardians and scored 13 runs. They did not score more than 3 runs in any of those games. They scored 3-1-1-2, 3-2-1. That is not going to happen for a team that's going to win a lot of ballgames. We spent earlier this week talking about how the Tigers are a mess, so we're not going to keep piling on there. Instead, let's celebrate Cleveland, a team that has won 6 games in a row, however, and is looking like a legitimately good baseball team.
I would like to bring back up the AJ Hinch quote from before this series began. Quote, "We know the division runs through Cleveland. As much as we want to say otherwise, they've done it. And so we have to take that personally and overcome them in order to get where we want to get to. That's the brutal truth." So I was talking to some people around the game, and they were like, that is really spicy from AJ Hinch, relatively, saying we know the division runs through Cleveland. And that it was kind of seen as a wake-up call to the players a little bit. Instead, it was a melatonin to the players, who said, yeah, AJ, very much the division does indeed run through Cleveland.
It was like, well, if that's the case, then if that's the case, sure. then we have
watch us
doesn't
run
matter
this
what we do
Cleveland.
This week. Right. Cool. I'm just going to take a nap here when we're hitting for the next
does
4 days.
Does the wild card run through Detroit?
I don't know. So tough scenes in Detroit. Meanwhile, Cleveland up to 30-22. They have built a 3.5-game lead over the White Sox, ladies and gentlemen. 9.5 games now ahead of Detroit, who are in sole possession of last place. When you say sole possession of, can you say last place or the possession? You don't really.
You
well, usually
last,
you say a sole
you
possession
can possess,
of first. Yeah.
You can possess
you don't
last
to.
Place by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me say
I mean,
this,
that's
Jordan.
What they're doing.
Jordan, if you're alone in the attic or you're alone in the basement, you're still alone.
Such is the case for the Detroit Tigers now. Half game worse than the similarly woeful Kansas City Royals. But let's turn our attention back to Cleveland, because they've won 9 of their last 10, six in a row. And, I mean, listen, this is the ball club closest to me. I admittedly have not seen them that much recently because I've been on the road. They've been on the road. Just haven't been around them as much. But the confidence was really starting to build here. And frankly, it's just a different group. I mean, with Travis Bezzano and Chase DeLauder in this lineup, this is no longer a lineup to be laughed at. Are they an elite offensive juggernaut? No, they are not. But when you are considering where they were coming from, which was one of the worst offenses in baseball last year, yes, even one that won the division, with so many spots in the lineup that you were just like, oh my God, I can't believe we're really counting on this. And, you know, Kyle Manzardo last year was a rare bright spot, but it was really, it was Jose Ramirez doing his thing. It was Stephen Kwan doing his thing for the first half of the year, but he was pretty bad for the second half. What's so interesting about this season, we've talked about how much Stephen Kwan has struggled. Jose Ramirez isn't exactly at his career norms in terms of his stats, although his underlying stuff still looks pretty good. But these new characters, plus some returning guys who have really stepped it up, most notably Angel Martinez and Brian Rocchio, now you're just looking at a lineup where you're like, yeah, no, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. These are guys that when they come up to the plate, I think that some good things are going to happen. And they just haven't had that many of those guys recently. And this is still with Kwan trying to figure it out. This is still with maybe some more guys coming in the second half of the season from AAA. They've got more hitting prospects on the way. Guys like Cooper Engel, Angel Henao, Ralphie Velasquez just got to AAA. So I don't know how much we're going to see those prospects. But even with Bezzana and DeLauder right now, and like I mentioned, those steps forward from some of the guys that the Guardians, it's actually a really interesting contrast to Detroit, right? We talked about how Scott Harris and the Tigers were like, we trust our guys, our hitters who you might not believe in, we believe in them. They're going to get better. They're going to keep getting better, and they're going to contribute. The Guardians were saying a lot of the same things, and I personally was skeptical. People in Cleveland were skeptical. They said, okay, why would I believe that Rocchio and Arias and Martinez, who has like a 270 on base percentage over the last three seasons, and Bo Naylor. Now, some of these have flopped, right? We know Bo Naylor did not exactly turn it on, and Arias, whatever. But enough of them have gone in the right direction that now we have a good-looking offensive group.
Yeah, so there's really two different dynamics going here that have buoyed this team, right? It is big steps forward from Rocchio Martinez, and it is the arrival of Bezzana, DeLauder, and frankly, Rhys Hoskins, who is a league average hitter.
Right. Rhys is a different category, this lineup, but important.
Which in this lineup is notable. Like there are, and so when you're looking at the team, you're like, why is this team better? Well, they have three new players. That is different than the Tigers, right? What the Guardians were saying was, we believe that the next wave of players is going to be good enough to justify not going out and getting a free agent or a bigger free agent than Rhys Hoskins. The Tigers were saying something different. They were saying our group of big league players is good enough. I don't think that the Guardians were ever saying that, right? Like,
I mean, I push back on that because this is where Rocchio and Martinez are so important. Rocchio and Martinez and Gabriel Arias and Bo Naylor had been playing in the big leagues for the last three seasons and were not good. They were bad hitters. And they kept rolling them out there, and they and coming into the season, they still said, we still believe in this group. And until Gabriel Arias got injured, which was kind of the thing that opened up the spot for Bezzana to begin with, they were still forging ahead with Rocchio and Arias and Valera in right field and Kafis and some of the guys we had already seen. And yes, you were right that DeLauder and Bezzana were the most important because they were the top prospects with the highest potential and they were going to show up eventually. But I still think it's the combination of those things. And yes, it is different than Detroit because besides McGonagall, who is, I guess, closer to the DeLauder-Bezzana category, that yes, they were really rolling it back. And to your point, bringing in someone like Rhys, even though that wasn't exactly a giant contract, was still an important part of this equation. I think it's a little bit of both. So I see what you're saying, but I still think that the steps forward from the guys who had shown large samples of being bad hitters, now being good hitters like Rocchio Martinez, is a huge part of this.
All right, let's move on from the NL Central, the AL Central to the NL Central. We had a little sweep this weekend, or as many people call it, a mini mop.
This week, not weekend. Not week. Weekend, maybe another one coming.
But mini mop.
It was this.
Right?
Yes.
A three game mop.
Yes, that's what they call it. The Brewers. The Brewers, folks. Surprise, surprise. I think when we talked about the Cubs, when they started to cool off, right, they had multiple 10-game winning streaks already in the same season, which is absurd. Mm. And yet, because the NL Central was not exactly waiting around, the NL Central did not do, well, certainly with the Brewers, but even the way that the Cardinals and the Pirates and the Reds have been playing, it's not like the Cubs had built this gigantic cushion. And surprise, surprise, it did not take very long for the Brewers to catch them, to pass them, and to go into Wrigley and show them that we are still the Brewers and we can still kick your ass. And yes, we got the usual Pat Murphy, oh, they've never heard of us, blah, blah, blah. He's going to keep running that playbook.
I thought about doing this for my bad.
100%.
Find a new 100%. Bit, Pat. Here's the thing. Here's why. I'm holding Pat Murphy to a higher standard. He's the funniest manager. Okay. And when they play the Cubs or they play the Dodgers, and he's like, aw, widowed me. The Brewers were so, aw, we're trying our best. Gee, golly gee. It's like, dog, come on. Like, I know even your players don't like think about it that way. Like, you're a really good team. Stop.
And frankly, now you have players emerging as legitimate Cy Young and MVP candidates, whether it's Bryce Durang and Jacob Mizorowski.
That's a great point.
And it's like, hello, you have some elite.
Right. It's like Jacob Mizorowski's throwing 103. Like, you're not the underdog in that regard. Now, him being a JUCO kid that you got in a later round and developed, like, that's all amazing and the thing that the Brewers did, and they deserve a lot of credit. But framing yourself as, like, you know, overmatched. That's it. Overmatched. Oh, we are so overmatched when we send Jacob Mizorowski out there. Get out of here, dude. Still, though, they deserve credit for strolling into Wrigley and just smacking the Cubs around. This was an impressive showing on the north side by the Brewers. Kyle Harrison, who they acquired from the Red Sox after he was involved in the Rafael Devers trade, has been awesome and looks like yet another punch to the gut for Boston.
Yeah, and not just
nine starts, 1.77 ERA.
We'll come back to Kyle Harrison in a second, but the fact that they got him also with David Hamilton, who is more like perfect Brewer, if there's ever been a perfect Brewer, is David Hamilton, and Shane Drohan, who I like that guy, and he also pitched well this week. He had 4 1/3 scoreless in the trade for Caleb Durbin. Which is not great for the Boston Red Sox right now. And that sucks.
Washington baseball.
That obviously bums us out.
If you're looking at...
What a freaking trade.
I'm just going to... Here you go. K per nine. I'll do K rate because I know you like that more. K rate this year. K percentage. Minimum 40 innings pitched. Number one, Jacob Mizorowski. Number two, Dylan Cease. Number three, Kyle Harrison. Number four, Jacob DeGrom. Number five, Paul Skenes. Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I was a huge Kyle Harrison guy when he first came up with San Francisco. I thought this is different. This is a very unique look from the left side with a real fastball, with real like metrics that'll play up. And I mean, let's be honest, he did get some real run. He made 24 starts with the Giants in 2024. This wasn't necessarily a situation where he never got a chance. But, and by the way, when the Red Sox traded for him, it was like, well, yeah, because the Red Sox kind of know what they're doing on the pitching development side. It's not surprising, even in this sham of a trade that is, you know, salary dumping Rafael Devers, that they would target Kyle Harrison. So then to just flip him this quickly is, and then have to another team that knows what it's doing on the mound, is just an absurd sequence. And now you're just seeing Kyle Harrison at his best. And it's so impressive. And it just, listen, like coming into the season, looking at the Brewers pitching, there was both a lot of depth, but then still some questions. We know they traded away Freddie Peralta. I was always skeptical of Brandon Woodruff from a health standpoint. That's not a hot take, and I feel bad saying it, but just look at how his last few years have gone.
Sure.
Unfortunately, he's injured again, and hopefully he can come back and contribute. But when you're able to turn these, I mean, geez, you got, you know, Mizorowski and Harrison alone. Henderson is good. You know, Chad Patrick is really freaking good. And I know he's not necessarily starting as much anymore, but all these guys that they've brought in or have drafted and developed. Sproat, I'm still skeptical of, but he's at least trended in the right direction. And at this point, why would I doubt the Brewers are going to get the best out of him? So just super impressive. And they're conjuring up enough offense to be a really good team.
Let's pivot to something else, because there's one more topic we need to talk about. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. Look at me. I can be third base. That's what J.P. Crawford said to Mariners manager Dan Wilson as he prepares for the second half of his career. This is a fascinating story. JP has been the Mariners shortstop for quite a while now, and not just the shortstop, but a key figure in this franchise's rise to prominence and consistent contention. JP is more important and more influential than the stat line. He is one of those players where the behind-the-scenes stuff matters, and he is a difference maker on this Mariners roster. Anybody that's played with him speaks very, very, very highly of him. But with the Mariners giving a long-term extension to top prospect shortstop Colt Emerson, the future understandably got a little bit hazy. What does this mean for J.P. Crawford, who's going to hit free agency at the end of the season? Well, Crawford spoke on that this week and offered some super interesting comments.
He was not, I mean, this is about as straight to the point as you can get, and as honest and revealing and authentic as you can hear it. Colt Emerson played his first game at shortstop recently when he came up, and a lot of this is because Brendan Donovan got injured, and I want to bring Brendan Donovan back into this conversation in a second. There was this dynamic. Well, it's like JP is the shortstop, because he's always been the shortstop. And so even though 99% of people would look at the situation and be like, well, Colt Emerson is the better shortstop, so shouldn't he just play shortstop and J.P. Crawford move somewhere else? But because J.P. Crawford has only played shortstop, it felt unlikely that they were going to do that and Colt Emerson could handle third base until J.P. Crawford moved on.
This happens until this all week. The time.
Yes.
This happens all the time, just to say, like, Derek Jeter, remember him? He played a lot of shortstop, probably when he shouldn't have. Andrew McCutchen playing center field over Starling Marte in Pittsburgh. Sure. This is something that happens from time to time where the guy with the tenure and the track record stays at the position that they shouldn't be at over someone who is younger and probably more equipped.
That said, J.P. Crawford is not stupid, and he sees the understands the situation, and he knows that Colt Emerson just got a bunch of money. And so he gave this quote because it was reported that he – well, first of all, he was seen taking ground balls at third base essentially for the first time. And so he was asked about it, and he said, quote, I want to be a Mariner for life, and I think that's the best way to do it. Wow. Okay. So we learn a lot from this very simple statement. The first and foremost being J.P. Crawford does not want to leave. Now, this is not necessarily a shock, considering his relationship with the team, considering he's the longest tenured player, considering all the things Jake mentioned earlier. However, because the dynamic of the roster is what it is, the way we've all been talking about it externally is, well, this is probably going to be the last hurrah for JP, especially if he views himself as a shortstop and someone else will pay him to play shortstop elsewhere. This is him saying, this is how I believe I can stay here, is to play third base, because I know that this Colt Emerson kid is a better shortstop than I am. And everyone else knows that, because it's not just that JP has tenure, it's that JP has, I mean, frankly, graded as the worst shortstop in baseball for the last few seasons. Some of you might be hearing that and saying, wait, what? Didn't this guy win a gold glove? Yes, he did. And yes, he has still capable of the occasional highlight reel play. I don't think he's as bad as the metrics say. But still, the objective fact is he is not a good shortstop. Kind of the same conversation we were having about Bo Bichette, where it's like, yeah, he could still do it, but is this what's best for the team when you have better options? However, what's so interesting about this quote is he right? Is this the best way to be on the Mariners long term? Will he get his wish if he successfully and willingly moves to third base does it? And that's the part that I'm not really sure. Right now, yes, the Mariners are probably a better team if he's playing third base and Colt Emerson is playing shortstop while Brendan Donovan is on the injured list. Defensively, that I think is true. But at some point, Brendan Donovan's going to be back. He's under contract for another season. They're saying that he can just slot into a utility role well, all right, what's happening at second base? They're committed to Cole Young being the everyday second baseman. Do you start rotating Donovan through DH? Do you start giving Randy Arozarena DH days? Randy Arozarena has not had a single day at DH this season, and I don't think he's going to suddenly want to start to do that. So I think to a degree, this story is a cool, interesting one where J.P. Crawford is showing his commitment to the team and wanting to help the team long-term, short-term, all these things. I'm not sure if this is actually going to help him stay on the Mariners long-term or not. But if it does, it's quite the development.
At the end of the day, him wanting to stay on the Mariners is going to be, will he take a one-year contract in the winter? Like, will he Probably. Leave money on the table to do it? That's it. And like, this helps. His role on the 2027 Mariners is probably as a utility man. Now, the problem is he is a 12th percentile sprint speed guy. And so it's not like you would feel particularly great about giving him a shot in left or center.
Do I think
him moving to third makes it more likely he's on the Mariners next year? Yes, I do. Do I think this is more than like a 5% bump? No.
Yeah. I think that that's fair, and we'll see how this shakes out. If he now starts becoming the everyday third baseman.
It's still admirable.
Yeah.
It's still admirable, and I think it will help this team. It's a level of selflessness that veterans don't always convey, and I think sets a really productive tone within the Mariners organization. Oh, if J.P. Crawford is willing to sacrifice this, then yeah, I'll show up early and get my work in. Yeah, I'll be more focused. Yeah, I'll be more selfless, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and the reality is Donovan is valuable because he's happy to just move all over the place and not have any sort of normal routine, and that's part of what goes into his value. But it's a great point about JP's selflessness because that's something that he's expressed, that this was not part of the reason why he's loved Seattle so much is just the way that they brought him in when he arrived from a trade from Philadelphia, where he felt like he never was comfortable in Philadelphia whatsoever. His career was not going in the direction that it wanted. Part of that is, I'm sure, his own on himself, but also he just didn't feel like he had that veteran support that he finally did get once he got to Seattle and Kyle Seager and D. Gordon really helped him. So I think that he wants to repay that. He doesn't want to be the grumpy old guy that's like, no, get out. This is my team. This is my spot. So I think that that is really cool. But it will be interesting to see how this roster evolves both this year and in the future. All right, let's take a break. When we return, it's Friday. We've got one heck of an edition of The Good, The Bad, The Ugly coming right up after the break.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's do it. Good, bad, ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing Dan Ugla from the week in baseball. I will start, which is all about the Pope, sports Pope, White Sox Pope, World Series 2005 Pope. So last year when Pope was elevated to Pope, Pope Leo sent a special gift from the Vatican to Paul Konerko. Pope Leo XIV, Paul Konerko wore 14. This jersey has both Konerko and Pope Leo on the back with the number 14. It is signed by Leo. In response, the White Sox sent a gift back, a similar jersey that said Konerko, Pope Leo with the 14 on it, signed by Paul Konerko. Now, here's the thing. It is easier to get a gift from the Vatican to Paul Konerko than it is to get a gift from Paul Konerko to the Vatican. A lot of gifts coming in to Rome from the Pope. A lot of gifts coming in. Okay. And only now, a year later, do we have proof that the Paul Konerko Pope Leo jersey that was signed by Paul Konerko has made its way to the pontiff himself. We have a picture of Hardball Baseball Southside Pope holding up the 1-4. And this is great. My prediction that Pope this year was Pope at a game. Not looking good. However, my ultimate dream of White Sox versus Italian Royals in Rome, regular season international game, Pope shows up. That is alive and well. One day. One day.
Yeah. With Team Italy, Sam Antonacci leading off. I mean, that's going to be awesome. So I look forward to that.
So
that's it.
Jordan.
yeah, go ahead.
I, in a couple of hours, am going to Italy. Now I am on vacation. Now I am not going to Rome. I will not be in Rome. Should I bring a White Sox hat? Should I, like, I have one downstairs. Like, should I just rock the White Sox hat to try and build, like, or the Royals hat to try and, like, build, you know, support for a game?
Oh, I thought you're hoping that, like, the Pope's driving by and is like, oh, stop, hold on, I want to talk to that guy.
Hey, hold up. Is that the baseball barbercast guy?
He keeps talking about me.
I'm like 200 miles away from the Vatican. He's just out there driving through Tuscany by himself.
Yeah, I think you should absolutely bring White Sox hat. If you're going to bring any hat, you might as well. I mean, what other representation do you want to do? I'm also, of course, just laughing at someone responding to this tweet saying DFA Jordan Hicks. It's like, all right, thanks. It's good to see that. Good to see that the Pope got the Paul Konerko jersey.
That's actually the Pope's burner.
Oh yeah, maybe. I mean, that's the part of the season too, right? Maybe he's never going to show up at a game, but I mean, the White Sox are having a pretty blessed season so far.
Here we go. Here we go. Does the Pope know who Munetaka Murakami is?
Yes, definitely.
Does the Pope
know? I think 100%.
Does the Pope know who Miguel Vargas is?
I think also yes. I think also yes.
Does the Pope know who Davis Martin is?
Davis
Martin with a 161.
I sure hope so by now. I mean, he's heading to the All-Star game right now. So let's hope the Pope knows about Davis Martin.
Let's actually speed run this. Yes, no, maybe. We're going to turn yes, no, maybe into a new segment, I think. Shut up. Stop shaking your head. Does the Pope know the player? Yes, no, maybe. Edgar Caro.
No.
Munetaka Murakami.
Yes.
Chase Mydroth.
No. Maybe?
Colson Montgomery.
Yes.
Miguel Vargas.
Maybe. Been there a while.
Sam Antonacci. Italian. Played for Team Italy on the White Sox.
Yeah, I'm leaning though.
Tristan Peters. Jared Kelenic. No. Andrew Benintendi.
Oh. Benintendi's an interesting one because Benintendi signed long enough ago and has now been around where he might be the one where the Pope's like, God, why did we sign Benintendi? What were we thinking?
Why is he still there? Drew Romo, Derek Hill, Randall Grichuk. No. Luis Angel Acuña, definitely. He knows he's a right-handed hitter. All right, Jordan, what is good for you this week?
My good this week could also be a bad for two fan bases, but I think that overall this is a good thing, and that is that Vanderbilt University and Louisiana State University will not be participating in the Division I Men's College World Series, let alone the tournament at all. Vanderbilt and LSU were both eliminated from the SEC tournament this week after a just terrible regular season for both of them. And this is shocking, and I think good for the health of the sport, all things considered, because these teams have been at the top or near the top for so long now, and the fact that they both had terrible seasons in the same year, I think is a good thing. I think that this is like a nice little bit of baseball humbling that is refreshing. In this era of college baseball, where a lot of these teams at the top are able to just stay at the top for so long, I think Vanderbilt and LSU missing the tournament, I think this is a good thing. Vanderbilt was the number one overall seed last year. They had a 19-year regional streak, the longest active one in Division I. LSU won the national championship last year. Of course, they won it a few years ago with Paul Skeens. And for both of these teams to not make it is really something. And I'm holding out hope. We'll talk a little bit more about the tournament next week. The SEC has delivered the last six national champions in Division I. There are still some very good teams in the SEC that can win it this year. Auburn and Georgia, Texas, whatever. Maybe this year we finally swerve in the other direction and get something a little bit different. I'm not getting too confident yet because the SEC is the SEC. But the fact that Vandy and LSU won't even be in it certainly says something about at least this year in college baseball. So, and I also love the other part about this that's good is that their head coaches, Tim Corbin and Jay Johnson, when talking about this, they were like, yeah, like we were not good enough. We have to figure out how to be better. This was a total, you know, disaster season. They didn't make any excuses. They were just like, yeah, this we got humbled this year. So we got to figure it out. And I like that attitude as well. So there you go. Kind of a weird good, but I'm doing it.
My bad this week is very different. We got some Twitter drama. Catherine Veritek speaks. Jason Veritek, Red Sox legend, was fake fired when Alex Cora was let go a month ago. He was technically reassigned to another part of the organization, but that was a recognition by Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow that you can't just like fire Jason Veritek. He's a franchise legend, someone who did not need to go into coaching, but just loves the Red Sox and wanted to do it. And so there was some discourse after his fake firing about how eager he would be to be involved in the organization still. Well, I think we have our answer. Someone tweeted at Catherine Veritek, "I know this club doesn't deserve it, but please come back." She quote tweeted that and said, "They have the, quote, smartest man in baseball running the show. They'll be okay without Jason. That's what they wanted. It's what's best for the team." Now, this is obviously a little tongue-in-cheek. Or maybe it's not, which is actually funny. It'd be funnier if this wasn't tongue-in-cheek. If Jason Veritek's wife was like, "Oh, no, this was the right move for the Red Sox." Like, Breslow is all over it. Like, this is great. Yeah, so, go ahead.
I think my favorite thing about this tweet, I mean, those quotation marks are doing a lot of heavy lifting and are also very interesting.
Smartest man in baseball.
So, smartest man in baseball, the fact that it's in quotes is so funny and interesting to me because on one hand, it's like mocking, right? They're like, "Oh, he's the smartest man in baseball." But the other thing about it is it seems to be referencing, I guess someone must have called him that seriously at some point. Like who at some point she must have seen someone genuinely be like, "I mean, he's the smartest man in baseball and I'm glad we have him. He's running the Red Sox." And that's the part that I'm like kind of confused by.
Now, someone responded and said, "I was a huge Tech fan when he played for the Sox. His wife talking crap about his former employer is a really, really bad look." You know what Catherine Veritek said to that? "Why are you so bothered by my tweet, but my husband is not?" Thinking emoji. So yeah, things are not well right now between the Sox and the most legendary catcher in franchise history. So yeah, good job, Red Sox. You alienated Jason Veritek. You did it.
Good job.
You did it. Yay.
Great work. All right, my bad this week. It's the Angels. It's not just the Angels. It's just the entire ending of Monday's game against the A's. And that it also is going to incorporate the A's. Because while they did go on to win the rest of this series, and because of this disaster on Monday, could have had a mop. They could have had our second mop of the week. But instead, they asked JT Ginn to go out there and try and finish his no-hitter. And it ended in Zach Neto hitting a walk-off home run two batters later. What is bad about this is just the whole last two innings of this game, I was just shaking my head at everything that was happening. You had the Angels, you had the A's who had this no-hitter, but it was 0-0. You had the Angels trying to make a pitching change and then calling for the wrong guy, but then bringing in the right guy, and somehow Chase Silseth got out of this huge spot against Nick Kurtz. You had the A's. This is a difficult thing. It's like you have a no-hitter going on. You don't want to start warming someone up because you're so sure that your guy's going to finish a no-hitter. And then as soon as he allows a hit, you're like, "Oh my God, we have to get someone warm. Oh wait, never mind. No one's warm. Oh, never mind. We lost. Zach Neto hits a walk-off home run." Like, the whole sequence was bad for everybody involved except for Zach Neto. Good to see him have a nice moment there. But then for the Angels, it's like, oh my God, you ended this losing streak. You had this walk-off home run. This is the spark that this team needs. And Zach Nitto's like, yes, we are going in the right direction. No, they're not. They lose the next three games. You have hundreds and hundreds of tarps off fans, which we know that's going on everywhere now. But now you got hundreds of them screaming, sell the team in the outfield, which is, of course, they are. And yeah, Angels, how about that? But yeah, Monday was a really, real good way to set the tone for everything involved in this series. And it was bad. It was bad. But good for the A's for taking care of business after that.
All right, for my Ugla, this week, Kyle Schwarber was on base.
That's what's weird about that?
He does that all the time. BASS, not BASE. There's a video of Kyle Schwarber shredding bass, baby. Schwarber, who I learned was in a band in high school where he played bass guitar, at a charity event for his foundation that called Schwarber's Neighborhood Heroes, supports first responders, military personnel, their families, does a lot of good work there. Just got on stage and just ripped the bass. He was just ripping bass, playing Seven Nation Army, the song. And this just contributes to Kyle Schwarber's musical legacy, which I believe includes he was like in the choir in high school as well.
Yes.
Yes, and it is that just, I remember. I just love that this is a man of many talents. He can hit one 450. He can get on base and, you know, he can get on base. He can do a lot for a ball club and a lot for a band.
This is quite the reveal. You can see some people in, you know, Phillies jerseys in the crowd that are just like, that Kyle Schwarber?
It's also great that he plays bass because he is the glue guy. Like the bass is the bass guy is the glue guy, right? The clubhouse guy is on bass. True. And that's what Schwarber is.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's probably underselling him at this point, but. This is a great video, and I'm glad that he's flexing this. This is a terrific video. All right, my Ugla
producer.
Producer
Andrew Hartz is a big music guy, very talented. Plays quite often. Can you confirm for us in the chat whether or not you would say that like the bass is where you'd put the clubhouse leader? Like, is I feel like Harper would be the front man, like he'd be on the mic, you know, and you'd have like Christopher Sanchez would be on lead guitar. Okay, because it rhythm section, backbone of the band. There you go. Thank you for confirming. My musical chops are much lower than Kyle Schwarber's and Andrew Hartz's. Jordan, the floor is yours for your Ugla.
My Ugla is a video of Diamondbacks shortstop. This is his own video, and shouts out to Corbin Carroll enthusiast on Twitter who shared this because I'm not on TikTok.
Robin.
But you know who Robin Carroll. You know who is on You know who is on TikTok, and I've seen some of his videos before, is Geraldo Perdomo of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Geraldo Perdomo decided to participate in pretty standard TikTok, you know, brain rot trend, which is just a very basic game where you have a series of celebrities kind of floating across the screen. And the way that you advance in this game, I guess, on TikTok, is that you say the name of the celebrity, and I guess the AI, whatever, voice transcription service or system recognizes that you say the name, and so it like clicks and you get recognition, voice recognition. They recognize, said the name of the right celebrity, and you go to the next one. And so this video of Geraldo Perdomo playing this little TikTok game and saying the names of these famous people is one of the funniest things I have ever seen. Geraldo Perdomo is a delightful personality, and that has always been true. This is so funny because it is a perfect cross-section of celebrities to kind of illuminate anybody who's playing this game's background. Because there's so many funny parts about this. But just to give you all an example, and I almost don't want to spoil the whole video for you because if you haven't seen it, it's just so funny. But it's a range of musicians and very rich billionaires like Elon Musk and athletes like LeBron James and Messi. And he knows some of them, and he very much does not know others. And it is one of the funniest videos I've ever seen. Thankfully,
well,
his teammate, Jorge Barroso, was sitting right next to him and was able to help him out for the ones that he did not know. So what is your favorite part of this video?
There was only one he did not know. I mean, he almost runs the table. Like, he gets everything correct except for one. He gets Mr. Beast, LeBron. My favorite is Albert Einstein, where he just goes, Albert, which is not what anyone calls it. Instead of being like, all right, Einstein, I'll be like, all right, Albert. Like, that's great. But, you know, the best is the one he misses, which is the one he does not know, which is, I'm just going to reveal it at this point, is Taylor Swift. And he's basically like, who's this chick? He asks Barroso, and Barroso's like, Taylor Swift. He's like, oh, Swift. And then when he's going to the end and he's nailed Mr. Speed and he's nailed Elon Musk, as he says, and you see Jackie Chan approaching, right? And you're like, ooh, that could trip him up, right? Nope. Huge age difference. Nope. Geraldo shortens up the swing, locks in, and nails it. Jackie Chan. Need more of these. Need 10 more of these with more celebrities for Perdomo. Please keep
going. Dude, honestly, like, this video alone.
No one else is allowed to do these.
Right. I need a whole series. I don't know how many other versions of these exist, but this video alone makes me want to download TikTok and only follow Geraldo Perdomo. So,
you think we can get Perdomo on the show and just do 10 minutes of us showing him celebrities? And him saying who they are. No baseball talk.
Oh, it's so great. I'm just, like I said, I'm so glad Barroso was there. Otherwise, he would just be staring blankly at Taylor Swift still to this day.
Still to this day.
It looks like this video was last week in Colorado, but God, it's so funny. Anyway, thank you to Geraldo Perdomo for giving us that. Jake Mintz, you are off to Italy, where you will be on vacation. You will be participating in a podcast or two while you are gone.
Yeah.
That will not include on Monday, which will also not include me. We will not have a podcast on Memorial Day. I will be back on Wednesday with a special guest. You will be back next Friday from Italy. Week Tuscany. After that, I'll have a couple special guests from Tuscany. We're looking forward to that background.
Live.
But enjoy your vacation. Everyone else can enjoy the baseball while Jake is gone. Jake will also probably enjoy some baseball while he is gone, but that's maybe up to his wife. Otherwise, it's okay. We know she's not listening. Thank you all for listening to this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We will talk to you all next week. See y'all on Wednesday.